Welcome back to Evolution of a Snake. I'm Zach.
And I'm Madeline.
And today we are giving you our very first recap of The End of an Era, the docuseries by Taylor Swift. But before we get into that, we have to alert you to a couple of things. One, patreon.com/withologist. If you want to see unedited reactions to the whole tour movie, we can't put them on YouTube because of copyright. So please go there, take a look. There's going to be 6 from me, a couple from Madeline, and a lot more fun bonus Taylor content that you can only get behind the Patreon. So go and join if you're interested in seeing. And also, if you're from Australia, we are coming to see you in February. We're coming to Melbourne, Brisbane, and Sydney. The Melbourne tickets are almost gone. Meet and greet is completely sold out, so go get them. Brisbane is going fast too. Sydney meet and greet is almost gone. We've got single seats only left, and general sale tickets are going quickly. So come and see us. What are you waiting for? And a little bird told me that there might be some surprises in store for the last leg of the Snares tour.
You never know. You never know.
Did you hear that little bird too, Madeline?
I heard it. I heard it loud and clear.
And that's all we're going to say about that. Cryptic like our queen. Madeline, what did you think overall so far of the first 2 episodes?
One big fat fucking hand heart, ladies and gentlemen. I was sitting on my couch weeping from start to finish, literally crying my eyeballs out, nonstop crying because I was cheering and clapping. I didn't realize, I did know that I was missing the Eras Tour, like I knew that. I don't think I realized how much I missed the Eras Tour. And I started to think about, like, because so much of it is about, like, oh, the community, the fan base, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know what? There was a time, just a brief glimmering moment during the Eras Tour where it really felt like there was a Swiftie community. Is that going on right now? Absolutely not. But there was a time, and I was thinking to myself, it brought us all together, and I miss it dearly. My beloved Eras Tour, we need it back. How do we get it back? I'm asking.
There is never going to be something like the Eras Tour ever again. That was like the impression that I got coming away from this. Although I did see something funny that was like Oasis Tour is like the Eras Tour for straight men, and to that I say, enjoy. You didn't have what we had. You did not have what we had. It was a magical moment in time that I think is the fan reaction to it is memorialized really well in the docuseries so far. And I'm just devastated that I'm never going to be at the Eras Tour again. Like, I haven't really processed that.
The processing is happening in real time. I was just watching the final show, and I was sitting there watching it, and I was like, I can't believe that there was a time where this was my life, like 3 nights a week. I would log in. If I was interested in the surprise songs, 9 times out of 10 I was, and I would get on my shitty little live stream. Sometimes I would just sit there and watch a stream. I'd just sit there and watch a grainy stream for like at least half of it. Why not? Getting excited, watching the first show in Paris after Torture Poets came out, watching with everybody. There were so many like community engagement opportunities, not just for us as like these people, but as for you as like a fan out there in the world. You could just like log on and like talk about Taylor Swift with people. Now you try and log on and talk about Taylor Swift with people and good luck. Because you
luck, babe.
Never know what somebody's going to be saying next. That's crazy.
It's a war out there. I remember a moment I really loved was when we got the first mashup, Is It Over Now, into Out of the Woods. That was a cultural reset in a different way. And I think that was the night we also got Karma as the Guy on the Chiefs. That
I felt like I could take over the world. Those were back in the days where we used to be able to just like go live. We would just like go live randomly. I miss that so bad. When something crazy would happen, we'd be like, get on the microphone. We'd just log in and say anything. Anything.
We were breaking news reporters. We were doing Twitter live spaces from the day that Joe first started, basically until the day that the Eras Tour ended. We were CNN correspondents doing breaking news every day. And I miss it.
It was so much fun, and now it's over, and now it's just not happening. Okay, great. But the documentary is, like, I have to say, I already have, like, my little routine set up. So for me, it comes out at 1 o'clock in the morning. Obviously, you're not going to get anything out of me if I watch it at 1 a.m. So I go to sleep. I wake up in the morning early. I go get my coffee, or I make it at home. I should be making it at home, but you know how that goes sometimes. Sometimes you go out.
Mama needs a treat.
Sometimes you need a treat. So anyway, I make my coffee. I get my coffee, whatever. Sit on my couch, light a candle, and I take myself away into the world of Eras on my new TV. By the way, I also have a sound bar and a subwoofer.
Wow. So Madeline's getting real serious about her TV.
Oh, well, we said if we're going to get a new TV, we're going to really do it. So I was watching this experience in like 4K, HD, surround sound. I was at the movies, essentially. Mm-hmm. It was amazing.
That's beautiful. That's gorgeous. Yeah, well, that's a great segue. And Madeline, why don't you lead us through what the hell happened in episode one? By the way, these are recap episodes. So if you're wondering like how they're different to like what's coming out on Swiftologist at the moment, those are reviews. This is just like Handheart recap, fun, enjoy, kiki, little bit of analysis. Like our
If you're wondering what the difference is, we're both doing reactions. Zach is doing his in-depth reviews, and then we're both doing these, which are... That's hard to describe them. I don't know. I mean, isn't that what you want? Isn't that what everybody wants?
With a little bit of light roasting, because we love.
So a little bit of everything. You get every single piece of the Empire working away just for you. So episode one was very aptly titled, Welcome to the Eras Tour. And as the title would suggest, it's kind of like an introductory episode to the whole documentary. And I would say like sort of the concept of the Eras Tour, but they don't get super in depth on like what is the Eras Tour, because everybody knows. Even if you're not a Swiftie, you are well aware of what the Eras Tour is. So it picks up. Yeah. So the whole documentary picks up at the start of the second leg of the tour in Europe, specifically in London. But the episode starts with a pan of British Columbia on December 8th, 2024. And it informs us this was the date of the last show of the Eras Tour. And we start the whole documentary 15 minutes until showtime for the final show. And it's the final huddle. And the first thing that we hear in this documentary is the monologue from Taylor. And this is her very final pre-show speech of the Eras Tour. So this is obviously very important stuff. So I paraphrase it a little bit because she talks for a very long time. But this is what she says, quote, "We have done something that no one has ever done. We have performed for over 10 million people in person. And I think about every single one of you as little kids. I think about the moment that you decided that dancing was your calling. And the moment that you first saw a band and thought, man, I want to save up for an instrument. Every single one of us has picked professions that categorically, people for the majority of the time, they tell you you shouldn't do it. You love this thing so much that you override most of the advice that you were given. Everyone in dance, everyone in music will tell everyone younger, if there's anything else you can do, do that. And so I'll see you getting rejected, not getting the job, not getting the part, not getting the solo. I'll see all of that happening along the way, the doors that were shut, the doors that you pried open. And then sometimes I'll see you when you're older, and I'll think about what you're going to tell your family or the people that you mentor, because every single person in here has the spirit to mentor others and to tell them, yes, do it, try it, go for it, if you have that same love for it. And I think about whether that's to your grandchildren or to the little neighbor kid who just wants to talk to you about what that was like," unquote. So that's kind of like the first half of her monologue. And obviously, long live. And bringing up, I thought at the end when she was talking about talking to the kids, telling people literally when they point to the pictures, please tell them my name.
And yet she didn't do long live that night. Properly.
No,
it's interesting.
It's not clicking in the brain. The thing is that she has this like uncanny ability to write like a lyric when she was like 19, 20 years old. And it's like a universal truth. Mm-hmm. And it comes up again and again. I'll never change, but I'll never say the same either. I'll never change.
This was Tae Jong-un addressing the people of Tae North Korea, and we were all hand-hearting and cheering. This is the propaganda that I love. This is what I want to hear. She's a great boss. That is something that was really a takeaway for me from a lot of these episodes, was that like she has a very like gentle parenting way of being a boss. And I think that it's right for her to memorialize this moment and galvanize everyone and make them feel like she is really at the helm of it, which she is. And it was nice to see everyone getting emotional about it.
And the second part of her monologue was actually my favorite, when she says, quote, "Everyone wants to talk about phenomenons like the Eras Tour as if it was pieces falling into place in some sort of accidental confluence of events that just happened. When I'm thinking about the people that are in this circle, I don't think about it as pieces that fell into place. I think of each of you as like tectonic plates on the earth that took millions of micro decisions and forces of you pushing and pushing inch by inch closer together. And the Eras Tour wasn't when all the pieces fell into place. That was just when every single one of us had done so much work to where this tour is just when we all clicked together. It is our job to make this look accidental, and it is our job to make this look effortless. But I just want every single one of you to know that I in no way, shape, or form think of this as just pieces falling into place. You put the pieces where they are. This was the biggest challenge any of us has ever done. Tonight, we complete that challenge." Period.
Some people might say that the dominoes cascaded in line.
What if I told you I'm a mastermind?
Taylor has said
ever heard of it, ever need to say,
and you may now paraphrase it from any song that she has. It's incredible.
Exactly. It's incredible. I mean, that's the power of having this much of a giant discography. We can just sit here and we could just like react to the documentary in nothing but Taylor Swift quotes.
Oh, I'm sure we could. I really am sure that we could.
We could. So she gives this great dramatic speech. Everybody's cheering. Everybody's clapping. Everybody's like, let's fucking do it. We see her going up in the lift. And then title card, the end of an era. I like the title card drop. Title card drops are very important. I always feel it, even in documentaries. And when they're done well, it really kind of scratches an itch in my brain. So I really liked the way they opened the documentary. I like starting at the end. I love that. And then
yeah, I get why we started at the end. I think my only note is that I did feel like what I've noticed from the two episodes is there's a lot of 2023 and 2022 footage, like a lot. And they're breezing through it and they're giving us little snippets here and there. And I have a feeling that like we're not going to get an episode that is like, this is how I came up with the set list and this is how I did XYZ. So that was kind of like, I'm getting teased by these like glorious clips of her doing things that I don't think we're going to get expanded upon, but we'll get into that with the second episode.
So then we go back to the very beginning. After the title card drops, after we see like what happens at the end, we go back to the very beginning. We see storyboards. We see like pieces of the set list, like on the wall on post-it notes. We see visual renderings of what the stage will look like when the tour is still pretty much just like a thought in everybody's head. This is where we see the picture of her in the lover romper superimposed onto a 3D rendering of the Eras Tour stage.
Killed me.
I rewound and watched it like three times because it's just like nobody says anything about it and it just happens. Like it's so normal that that's there and they're so used to it. I wasn't used to it. I cackled like a hyena.
I literally had to pause and itch ball. And what's so funny is that like this was in 2022. So this was before Lover got its rebrand and became her most successful streaming album ever. This is when Lover was still the catastrophic colossal flop that made her abandon pop music for like 4 years. So it's hilarious to me that like the moment, it's also just the pose that she's doing. She's like,
it's so good. You know, she thinks that she's serving. That picture keeps coming up.
It couldn't be Wango Tango. If you think about it, that would be the most appropriate thing to put there. But she was like, I don't want to remember.
Not
that
on my watch.
Let's do a time when I was serving.
Not on my watch. To think that at the time that they were putting the Eras Tour together, Wango Tango was one of the last really big performances that she did.
It's
I'm
sick.
Silent. Isn't that sick? It's and to sick. That just doesn't make sense. I can't like fathom like the Taylor. Like if we had more footage of like the 2022 beginning of blah, blah, where this isn't even a thing yet. Seeing that Taylor and then comparing her to the Taylor that we're looking at today. Oh, that's a different girl, ladies and gentlemen. It's crazy. She's different. She's
and
changed
And it's only 3 years ago. Like she's completely different.
She's changed forever. The Eras Tour, it was a mystical force. It was a mystical force. So nonetheless, hilarious. They also used a picture of her when she did Betty at the ACMs during COVID. I loved that. I loved that.
Why
the hell not? So Taylor says that she came up with the idea for the Eras Tour 2 years before the tour started. And she says that there were two unpleasant factors that culminated in the invention of the Eras Tour. The first factor that led to the Eras Tour, her entire catalog was sold out from under her. She says, quote, when you revisit something, you go back into that world. All this work is so indicative of the time I was in my life. I feel like I'm reading my old diaries, thinking about all the different girls I was until I was this one. So that planted this little seed in my mind of the idea of celebrating your past. And we knew that.
That made me want to cry. When she was like, all the girls I was before I was this one, I was like, will you get off my neck for a second, please? Will you let me breathe? Sure.
It was so, and it's like, I feel like we knew this, like we could have figured out in our own little dumb brains why she wanted to do the Eras Tour and not just like tour Midnights or just tour Torture Poets, right? Like we knew, but it's really nice to hear her like really articulate it and like say it like, listen, they stole my music, A, and then B, the second factor was the pandemic and she released 5 albums that she couldn't tour. So yeah, I mean, I think everybody could agree the Eras Tour had to happen. Taylor knew it and she said, let's make it happen.
It needed to happen. And I think also like the thing with the Eras Tour was that because she was so busy and so focused on like just the grind of getting to every show, there was no communication to us. There were no interviews. There was nothing about like why I did this, what the purpose was for. The most we heard from her would be when she would introduce a surprise song. So it's really nice to hear from her in hindsight about like we needed the official declaration.
We did. And thank God we have it now. So after she says all this, we see clips from TikTok and Instagram reels, just social media in general. And there's one in particular of a girl with a Starbucks cup in the passenger seat of a car, weeping and screaming about how she's been loving Taylor since she was 11 years old. And is she ever going to tour again? And I was like, you know what? That's pretty much how it felt. Pretty much exactly how it felt. Weeping and screaming at the top of my lungs. Are we ever going to see Taylor perform live again? Well, yeah.
I remember where I was when it was announced. I was like, this is the single. It was because we didn't expect this as well. I don't think we expected Tora at all. But when the Eras Tour came out, I remember, first of all, we were like, what is this branding? We saw it and we were all like, we're now used to it. But at the time when it came out, we were like, that's a really interesting graphic design choice. But I also remember being like, this is an insane idea for a tour and I have to be there.
Right. Exactly. I remember thinking, I had it in my head. I was like, everything that people really want it to be, it's not going to be that. That's kind of what I remember my main thought being. And of course, I was wrong. Thank God. I love it.
Thank God.
Thank God. We get our first Andrea talking head right after this. And the only thing she says is she's like, it's 3.5 hours long. How can it be? It can't be 3.5 hours long. That's too long. Wrong. Not long enough. Many people are saying it should have been 4 hours. I don't know.
I agree. We could have.
So then we get footage, and this is more proof that cameras were up and filming during the first leg too. And I would like to see more. I would love to see more of that first leg of the tour. You know, inquiring minds want to know. Inquiring minds want to know what was going on. I want to see the archives. So she says that planning for the tour was happening all at once, all over the world, which I thought was really interesting. And it makes sense now that I think about it. She started her physical training 6 months before rehearsals even started. And at the same time as she is starting her physical training, the dancers are starting to get ready. The production design is starting to get ready. There's dudes building the stage and like putting it together and testing it and messing around with it. And it's so interesting to see how many different people it actually takes to make these things happen. Because I think so many Swifties have it in their heads that Taylor is like in every room at every single second, managing everything, and she's in control. And it's like, I think this is all her vision. But at the end of the day, she needs to be at the gym and some guy has to be making sure that the sparks are going to fly during Fearless. That's not her job.
No, she needs, you need job. To, as soon, when you get bigger, you learn that you need to outsource and delegate the things that are not that important to you. So she shows up and goes, I like this. We're going to change that. And she comes back in 2 days and it's fixed. That's how it should
exactly. be. Exactly. Exactly. I really like seeing like all the individual people that were working on the tour. It really kind of like, it takes you aback because when you're at the show, all you know is that you're seeing Taylor and the dancers and the band and the backup singers. And that's, you know, oh, the, you know, big stars of the night. But there are so many people who we never see without whom the show would not even remotely exist. So
it's
I really like that part.
It's a testament to the magic of the show that you suspend your disbelief. Like you don't think about the fact that this is an extreme physical endurance test for every single person on that stage. You don't think about the fact that this needs to be torn down and shipped across the country in like 2 seconds. You don't think about all of those little things because Taylor has successfully created a world that is so immersive that you think that she just appears there magically and then like goes to sleep in her little like Sleeping Beauty box and in her cruel summer bodysuit and wakes up again and does it all over. It was really cool to see like, yeah, the mice behind.
It was the mice, the little worker mice chugging along behind the stage. So her dancer says that Taylor walked into the first day of rehearsals, her first time meeting all the dancers, mind you, she's never met these people, and she was crying. And he says, quote, I've never seen the boss come into rehearsal crying with tears of happiness and passion about their job.
You see, what we all forget is that this was born out of something extremely painful. Something that's becoming more and more clear to me as time goes on is like the master recording situation like did a huge number on her psychologically. And the entire impetus of Taylor's version, and really I do think the Eras Tour was to try and soothe that really active wound. So I can imagine that showing up for your first day of rehearsals to like walk through it all together for the first time, like putting all her eras together in one single moment and show, that must have been so cathartic, but also there's like a grief there.
Yeah, because it's finally happening. And that means it's pretty close to finally being over. Mm-hmm. That's the crazy part. And at that point, it wasn't even close to being done. That's the crazy thing. But it literally, at the same time, feels like it was just yesterday. It was just freaking yesterday. So they're doing all these rehearsals. She says, I wanted to overserve the fans. That was my main goal. We knew that. We pretty much knew that from day one. I will never forget when 3 hours had gone by and she was still on stage on that first night. I was like, this can't be.
I got a text from you and it said, we're 20 songs in and she hasn't done anything for Midnights. And I was like, that can't be.
The happiest day of my life. It was such a good day to be a Samantha.
Oh, it was crazy. To be at opening night.
When I saw that she was doing not only Willow, when I saw she was doing Marjorie, I was like, this is different. This is something we've never seen before.
For me, it was Tolerated. In my head before that, I was like, that's not a stadium song. I had a real delusional idea of what could and couldn't be performed in a stadium. And she, the last Great American Dynasty, I wouldn't have bet a dollar on that being performed. And yet.
It was incredible. And I cheered the whole time. It was incredible. And I cheered the whole time. So we see these clips again, evidence that the cameras were up in 2022. We see clips of the first full stage rehearsal. You can imagine a very important, very big day. And everybody, you know, they finish the rehearsal and everybody's clapping and cheering like, it's time, what are we going to do? Blah, blah. And then it goes directly into, good morning, America. It's Taylor. And I have something to announce that I've been waiting to tell you for so long. And everybody cheered. I know I did. I know.
Fuzzy front-facing camera quality. Couldn't even get a real camera in the room. When Good Morning America calls, she says, all right, turn the light on. Let me get my phone camera
let me
out.
Let brush my hair really quick. And
she
I love it.
She don't care about
she
Good
doesn't
Morning
care.
America.
No,
she said at 7 a.m., this is all you're getting.
So then we go to clips. You know, the tour has been announced. So what are we going to talk about? We go to clips of girls very easily obtaining their Eras Tour tickets. Must be nice.
This was one of the most delusional parts of the documentary. It gagged me. I was like, not only are we saying getting tickets was a fun process, we're also being like, we're showing pictures of like Ticketmaster and being like, yay, this went so well. I'm getting a gift. This is the best day of my life. It's like, I want to see the compilation of the people that
show
had
the
mental breakdowns. Yeah, let's see that.
So there's like
let's
one
see
main
your disappearing
girl.
Instagram story.
What I find really interesting is that most of the videos they show are people getting gifts. There's only one girl that they show actively on Ticketmaster.com. And someone pointed out to me, that girl went to New Orleans. So that was not in the first round of ticket buying. They had no footage to show of the ticket buying process from round one. They couldn't. They didn't have
anything. Nobody cheered.
Nobody cheered. And then when they're showing the news clippings, they only show news clippings and like stories about how Taylor fans crashed Ticketmaster. Technically true, but the framing of it, it's like, oh, no.
And it's interesting. She wants to talk about the demand, but she does not want to talk about the issue that came with it. And it's like, that's totally Taylor, totally expected. But what I've seen really funny is like Swiftie's bending over backwards to defend this by saying, not only did she not include it because she, they were saying that she didn't include it because she doesn't want to get in the way of the civil case that's going on. And I was like, she don't care about that. She don't care. If she cared, she would do something herself. She is not out there helping the Swifties give evidence to take over Ticketmaster. Girls, if she really wanted to do something, she would have done what Olivia Dean did or what Hayley Williams did. She didn't care. And that is what you need to get into your heads, guys. Enough. She didn't care. The tickets sold. She was good.
And tickets went on sale after the first disastrous sale for like the first leg of the tour. There were multiple occasions where tickets then went on sale again for the New Orleans shows, for the Canada shows, for the Europe shows, for the Asia shows. Nothing changed.
It happened all over the
process.
World. The international system sucked. Anytime that you had to use Ticketmaster, it was a disaster. So selective memory.
So then, and I'll never forget a face, the 13 management guy who tried to stop Taylor from getting political in Miss Americana shows up and he says, the demand was crazy. Say more.
Yeah. I thought she was going to lose half her audience. Huh? Didn't you say that
say
before?
More. Hmm? Oh, the demand was crazy? We had, is he Australian? I sometimes, this is my big
He's
embarrassment.
He's British, I think.
Sometimes I mix up British and Australian and it's like people who are British or Australian are like, how can you do that? I don't know. I thought
I
he was Australian.
British.
he could be British, but he was saying like, oh, you know, the demand was so crazy. We could have done, you know, 220 stadium shows.
Why didn't you?
What about Bing Crosby?
What happened to Bing Crosby? I thought that she was going to fail. I thought she was going to flop because she said, Marsha Blackburn, you should win.
I found that very interesting. He should be ashamed to show his face.
He comes back. Also, this is not his first appearance.
So in summation, the Ticketmaster thing, I think we can all agree, it was kind of like glazed over. And it was kind of like a reframe of like, it was just that everybody wanted to go so bad. And it's like, well, everybody like did want to go so bad.
I have to say I was booing at this part.
Well, it's like, tell the truth, Ellen. Like, actually, this
is a documentary.
Truth, Ellen.
Is it not? It's not a movie. It's
and everybody
fictional.
Knows that's not what happened. Everybody knows. It's just like, give a little nod. I tell the story.
Or don't talk about it. Or don't talk about the tickets.
Right. I had to call out of work. I had to be like somebody. I had to beg on my hands and knees for Erica to cover my shift. Because I was like, I can't not go. And I did not get tickets because they fucked me. So somebody needs to cover my shift. And thank God she did. And it took me, I think, 10 hours total to buy tickets. And they're showing some girl who was sitting at, oh, mom, I just got tickets, fifth row. That didn't happen. I mean, it did happen to her. Congratulations to the diva. But didn't happen to most of us. Nonetheless. So everybody's got their tickets, according to the documentary. And clips from opening night in Swift City are shown. Welcome to the Eras Tour. And this is when she does her montage. Welcome to the Eras Tour. She deliberately included Welcome to the Eras Tour, Kansas City. She said, I just have to kind of pop a Tavis pill really quick.
Singapore not mentioned. And you know what? Singapore was degraded in the second episode. I just want to say, okay, Singapore not mentioned. Singapore talked down to. I'm on autopilot. You know what? I don't like that. Welcome to the Eras Tour, Singapore, please.
Well, she did say welcome to the Eras Tour, Seattle, to Mason specifically.
And Dublin.
Mason in the audience, clapping and Mason's cheering.
There. Yes, Mason and Madeline are in the Eras Tour movie, in case you didn't know. Mason has his hat on and he's going like this, woo!
He's letting them know he's here to rock. He was there to freaking rock. This was like right after he ate an entire Philly cheesesteak sandwich. So he was like, ready.
That will make someone want to rock, let me tell you.
So I was cheering because I know someone who was there that fateful night. That fateful night in Seattle. It was incredible. And Kansas City. Again, she just had to do it to him. So they include a news clip of how the Eras Tour could gross over $4.6 billion. And they include a clip of a lady going, Swiftnomics, and like all this stuff about how she's the genius of the century. I think she was right to include that. I think I don't have a problem with that. I have no problem with being like, I'm the
genius.
It's
interesting to go, I'm rich. It is interesting. She does it over and over again. It is.
Well,
it's not wrong. Again, if it's concerned with truth,
it's not wrong.
It's true.
4.6 billion, ladies and gentlemen. And she's like, I use that to buy my master's. Well,
whoa, Taylor only did two. Flop.
So then this is when we start getting into like all of the clips of fans and they're showing how big the crowds are. They talk about tailgating, but I was offended how they called it tailgating. Come on. It's called tailgating and everybody knows that. People outside the stadiums, hundreds, thousands of people outside the stadiums, people dancing around, people doing the Willow Circle thing and, you know, going crazy in the pit, et cetera, et cetera. And over this montage, Andrea says, the thing that's so special about this is that community. People get into that stadium and celebrate. Not just what's happening on that stage, but what's happening with them and how they honor each other and love each other. It just became this movement. And I heard her say that and I said, Swifties loving each other.
I literally was about to say honoring and loving each other. I definitely heard about scraps at the Eras Tour. It was not all honoring and love. I wasn't honoring and loving everyone that I saw. Let me tell you that for free.
Well, I thought that you had to call the cops on someone. I had to
lodge a death threat over the Eras Tour. So you know what? It wasn't all peace and love.
He literally had to call.
I literally had to call a death threat because I said I was going to the Eras Tour.
But
all
you
right?
know what?
It wasn't all rainbows.
I'm really glad that from Andrea's perspective, it was Swifties loving each other. And I understand why she thinks that because she has like a very specific view of it because everybody's happy when they see her. Bracelets, they're
acting right in front of her. They're acting very right. Been there. You know, I can't judge. I've been the person who acts one way in front of Andrea and the other way when she's not looking.
Well, many such cases. So, Taylor says, quote, this is more than a tour. It's like a force to be reckoned with in global culture. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're coming off of this scene. This is so great. This is so happy. This is a place to be. Everybody's, you know, it's about love, community, et cetera, et cetera. And then she says, never in my life did I think we would have a terrorist plot. And the screen goes dark and it shows Vienna, Austria, August 8th, 2024. When I tell you that you could have knocked me over with a feather when I heard her say those words, I'm serious. I really didn't think she was going to talk about this. And I was so happy that she did. I was gagging.
In the first 20 minutes, too, I was like, whoa, we are really going there.
Let's get this straight right off the bat. So we go into news clips from CNN about the Vienna shows being canceled. They're talking about how the suspects were arrested. And they also kept in talking about what was found in the suspects' houses, which was, of course, bombs and other weapons to kill people, etc., etc. So naturally, the question is on everybody's minds, what's going to happen to the rest of her European tour? Well, guess what? We're in London, England, and the tour is going to continue. Vienna, unfortunately, had to be canceled because it wasn't safe, but we're going to keep on trucking, ladies and gentlemen. And Taylor is doing sort of like an interview in her hotel room. She says, there's a weird feeling going into these last shows in Europe. It sort of feels like we've done 128 shows so far, but this is the first one where I feel like I'm skating on thin ice. We've had a series of very violent, scary things happen to the tour. Like we dodged a massacre situation. And so I've just been kind of all over the place. There was this horrible attack in Liverpool at a Taylor Swift themed dance party. And it was little kids. And at this point, she breaks down in tears as she's thinking about the girls who were murdered in a knife attack at a dance party that was themed around her. So the next thing she says is that she's going to meet some of the families tonight before the show and then put on a pop concert. And she says when she meets them, she's not going to cry. She's going to be smiling to the best of her ability. I was deeply shocked. It was shocking to me when she brought up Vienna. I was really, really surprised that she brought up what happened in Liverpool.
That was the kind of thing that when it happened, I was like, we were both like, that. There's no way that she's not absolutely completely bereft and devastated by this. It's such a specific like attack on femininity, on girls, on girlhood, not on Taylor, obviously, but like the fact that it happened in her name associated with her and she had no control over it. Like this wasn't like something that happened at an official event. Like this was just something that randomly happened because little girls were coming together to love Taylor Swift. And I can't imagine, this is the girl who's giving her hat to 8-year-olds every single night on stage. Like, I can't imagine the shock and grief of that. But also with the Vienna stuff, I think she seems so, like her voice is kind of hoarse. She really seems like that European tour schedule, if you look at the amount of shows she did and the amount of time she had off in between, and let's also keep in mind she was recording Showgirl at this point, like she was broken. She was tired. You could hear it in her voice. She looked tired. I was like, this is a lot to happen all at the same time. How do we keep on going like this?
Well, speaking of keeping on going, she says, quote, any of this, referring to the fact that she's crying, she's breaking down, gets out of the way before you get on stage. You lock it off. 3.5 hours, they don't have to worry about you. It's like you're a pilot flying the plane. And if you were like, there's turbulence up ahead, and I don't know if we're actually going to land in Dallas, I'm going to try hard, but I don't know if I can figure out how to land this plane in this turbulence, everybody's going to freak out. You just have to keep a calm, cool, collected tone of we will be landing in Dallas at 6:04 p.m. It's nothing we haven't seen before. Just keep your seatbelts fastened and welcome to the Eras Tour.
This is why it really PMO when there was like, because the fans, I'm sorry, were acting demented when this happened. They were demanding things of her. And it's like, I don't think that everybody had an opinion on how it should or shouldn't be handled. And it's like, I think this is pretty uncharted waters and nobody really would know exactly how to handle this properly. And right. Top of her mind was, of course, making sure that close to 500,000 people were not going to experience something tragic and terrible at her following events. And I've even seen people having responses to this being like, well, it's just the way that she phrased it in her Instagram post where she was like, oh, of course I couldn't talk about it. And it's like, well, you were dogpiling on her when she was trying to solve this problem. Like, what do you, right. I'm kind of like, you just expect her, she can't win. She really just can't win sometimes.
I also find it really interesting when like individual Swifties that are like 19 years old on the internet think that they have like better emergency, like they know exactly what they would do in this situation. And it's like, there's Taylor Swift and a team of people, and they're frantically trying to figure out what the best way to go about this like whole situation is and what the best way to respond. What should we do? What should we say? This, that, and the other thing. A team of people. And
including
you,
probably police and like the authorities and government officials. This is not just, my merch arrived. My snow globe was broken. No, this is not that.
No. And turning it into like a, well, this is my think piece on what she should have done, like on situations where it's like people were in danger or people actually died. It's like, man, put the keyboard away for 10 seconds.
Did you get your moment?
Did you get the job? Taylor didn't hire you to be her crisis manager. She didn't.
She shouldn't, because you don't know what you're talking about.
She shouldn't. But I was deeply moved by this scene. And I was thinking, this was a moment where I was watching and I felt like, man, this is so different from Miss Americana and like the tone of Miss Americana. And like, this feels more like, I don't want to say anything too strong. We're only two episodes in. I mean, what can we say? But I just felt like, man, I'm feeling like this is going to be something kind of different. I'm not saying it's going to be the tell-all expose, but this is already more emotional and like less like than Miss Americana was. Like, this is way more real.
That's really interesting. I kind of had the opposite reaction, where when this happened, I was like, oh, this is just like a Miss Americana, but not in a negative way. I just think that like the way that Taylor is going to choose to be emotional or vulnerable is going to be in like very short, controlled glimpses. And that is completely her decision. Like, obviously these are emotional things she's talking about, but it reminded me of Miss Americana. Like, the moments that were really interesting in that documentary were when it was like her and a camera in a car. And she was talking at the camera for like a minute or 2 minutes. But in those 1 or 2 minutes, she says something that is like much more profound than the 15 minutes that just came before it. So I think it kind of follows a similar structure in that way. But definitely what she's talking about is a lot more, she has a lot more stuff to talk about in this one than she did in Miss Americana.
Yeah. And I also just kind of felt like it was more upfront. Whereas opposed to, there's one scene in Miss Americana where she cries. And it's 15 seconds and we have no idea what she's talking about.
Yeah.
So that's kind of
here she's explaining.
Like, yeah. Here's, it's like very clear. And really it's like the Vienna situation and talking about like these tragedies that happened. It's really like 20 minutes of the episode. Like, not every second is what happened in Vienna, what happened in Vienna. But it's like everything that comes after it is like, this is why what happened in Vienna and what happened to those girls in Liverpool was so terrible, because this is supposed to be this amazing safe space for everybody to come. And it for a couple moments, it was not that.
Yeah. If Miss Americana was like 10% access to Taylor, I would say this is a solid 25%.
Yeah. So after this, we go to a shot of the stage. It is 10 hours before showtime. And this is the first show after Vienna. And it's in London. So, you know, the shows in Vienna were canceled. And now we're kind of like continuing on in these European dates, knowing that there was this like terrorist threat that happened and everybody almost got really hurt. And some people did actually get hurt somewhere else. So we see wardrobe, dancers getting ready, crew getting ready, all the people who make the show happen every night. And we see Amos. Amos shows up to do a little interview.
King.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Zaddy. He was looking good.
he was kind of looking good. He's kind of buff.
Right? Yeah. I was like, Amos, okay.
So he says, quote, I think about how much love everybody here is pouring into what they do. The people who build the stage, hang the PA, and the people who wash the clothes and play the instruments and do the dancing. The only thing we're trying to do is to make the world go away for a little while and make people feel seen and let them scream lyrics that they love at the top of their lungs. So what happened in Vienna and the idea of someone being able to rewrite the headline of this whole experience with one awful act, I feel so grateful that it got stopped. But I also felt so horrible for those fans. Unquote. Period. It had to happen. It absolutely had to happen. And then Cam says, quote, "This tour represents something more than just fans coming to hear songs. So we have a large responsibility to do the show and still show up for fans in the way that we can and know how." And then her drummer says, quote, "The world right now feels really torn. And I think with this tour, we're shining enough light that it actually feels like, well, man, this is absolutely affecting a lot of lives. And I think for all of us that are in it, that's a pretty good perspective after Vienna. So let's get out there and do these shows because this is why we're doing it." And I think all of bringing all of these specific quotes in at this moment, I think it's meant to demonstrate, first of all, why, even after all these terrible things happened, her and the whole crew felt so steadfast about continuing forward with the rest of the European shows. And second of all, how much the Eras Tour meant not just to the fans, but to them as well. And what the Eras Tour represented to so many people, which was a safe space to be happy and free from those scary things that are happening in the world. I really liked this scene. And I think they chose just the right quotes.
Yeah, it's hard not to think that like what's going on in the wider world now culturally isn't a bit of a backlash to like the ferocity of the Eras Tour and how everybody like wholesale bought into the fact that this is like a unilaterally good thing. This is an amazing thing that's happening. It's providing a space that needs to exist right now. And everybody wants to go and see it. Everybody wants to go and key at the Eras Tour. And yeah, Taylor kind of touches on this a little bit more with Florence in the second episode, but like it's a really feminine and safe place to be. And I think emphasizing that, like the kind of good that it did, was really powerful.
It was powerful. And they tried to stop it. And Taylor said, "Not on my watch. Not on my watch. You can't stop this kind of power." So then we cut to Taylor rehearsing "Everything Has Changed" in the car on the way to the venue because Ed Sheeran will be making a surprise appearance that night in London. And again, this is the first show after Vienna. So she talks
about
how—
She sounds amazing, by the way. Sounds amazing when she's singing Mariah.
A cappella. That's Taylor Carey. That's Taylor Carey. That's Taylor Houston. She talks about how bringing out special guests is one of her favorite things. And they show a clip from the Red Tour, which is one of my favorite things in the world. Clips of Taylor and Ed during the Red Tour make me want to jump.
She's swearing.
I'm swearing. Swearing friendship is life. At that time period of being a Swiftie, I loved the Speak Now era. Everybody knows this is my favorite era. It really takes me back. But something about the Red era does something very similar, but in a different way. And I see clips of Taylor and Ed together, and it makes me want to cry my fucking eyes out. I'm like, oh my God, it used to be so simple. It used to be so beautiful. What happened?
It used to be we sing "Everything Has Changed" every night on tour. I would like to return to that.
I would love to return to that. Thank you so much.
Can I also just state for the record, someone in the comments of the Patreon said, "But Zach, you hate Everything Has Changed." That's not true. That's not true, Ellen.
Though on one of the, if anything you've ever said, you were like, it's not one of your favorites from Red. That's it. Not I hate it. Just like I have other favorites. Okay,
but I feel like we
allowed?
Talk all the time about how lyrically it's one of her most beautiful songs. Hello.
So dust off your highest hopes. Ever heard of it? I was there. And let me remind you, I was there that dark night in Seattle when she said "Everything Has Changed." I was there. I was there. Ed Sheeran was not there, and PMO to this day. But we did get that really cute moment where she was like, "Nobody else is here. It's just me." And then people kept screaming like Ed, and she kept looking behind her like, "There's nobody here." Seattle was different, man. It was just a different time. Nonetheless, quote, she says, "It's really cool for him to come and do this because I think it's going to really delight people. And I think in a moment when a lot of the fans need a pick me up, because I know I do." Cue Travis Kelce calling on the phone. So he calls her and she actually keeps him off speakerphone for like the first part of it. And then she remembers, oh, I'm in a documentary, and takes him onto speakerphone. But nonetheless, we can still hear him. When I put the captions on, it said what he was saying. I couldn't hear him the first time, but the captions on, I could hear what he was saying. But she tells him about her day and they joke around a little bit. "You've got Coach Reed. I've got my mom." Like, obviously this is a phone call that means a lot to her. And Travis says he wants to be there really bad and she wants him to be there. And they say goodbyes and they say, "I love you. Oh, I love you so much. Oh, I love you." And then she says, "Some people get a vitamin drip. I got this conversation." The perfect amount of Tavis for an episode. I said, that's
that
really cute.
That is literally, we needed that.
we needed it so bad.
We needed to see how he comforted her in her moment of need, and we saw it.
We saw it. She needed that phone call bad, and he knew it. I also liked, this is skipping ahead a little bit, but like he was on the phone with her when the show was over. It was like what time a.m. for him, and he was answering the phone.
Remember when she was in the car on the way back from the Reputation show in silence, not talking to anyone? Remember that?
Never remember that? Miss a chance to deep fry a turkey. We never miss a chance to deep fat fry a turkey. Not an sizzle, evolution sizzle. Of a snake. Sorry. Sizzle, sizzle, ladies and gentlemen. Yum, yum. Thank you so much, Travis. Thank you so much, Travis. So then after this, you know, she's going to the venue, blah, blah, blah. And then randomly we get Amos backstory. And I was cheering.
There's a lot of random backstory. There's a lot of random backstory in these episodes.
So nonetheless, he says that he started playing for Taylor in 2007. Many of us remember that. Quote, the thing that remains really constant is that there's not a challenge that she isn't going to meet head on and kind of decide to conquer. And having that kind of energy in the lead spot has inspired, I can say me personally, to do a lot of the same things. Preach it. Having somebody like Taylor, I feel like if Taylor was my boss, I could conquer the world.
Makes you want to go to work.
It makes you want to go to work. You're not scared to go to work. You're not sad to go to work. You're not miserable to go to work because guess what? Taylor's there and the energy is right and everybody's getting paid well. So everybody's happy and everybody's there because they want to be. I have to
share. And she's putting in the work. She's not saying I won't rehearse. She's not saying I'm not going to be there with you when you're putting things together. She'll be there.
Right. So Amos tells us that the very first band meeting of the Eras Tour, before anyone knows what it's going to be, what it's going to be called, and we see footage of this, but we're not allowed to really see it. We can only kind of see it like in splices and pieces, but we can see Taylor is describing to them in detail her vision for the tour. And she goes through like the very early version of the set list. And Amos says, we had 40 songs at the beginning. And he was like, we got to cut some of this down. But instead they wound up adding 3 more songs. And I was like, well, I would like to have seen the process of
what
that
were
happening.
The 3 added ones?
I mean, let's not speak too soon. We've still got 4 episodes, but I'm thinking, cause this was shown here. Is it going to be shown again later? I feel unsure about that.
There's not enough making of the Eras Tour content in the Eras Tour documentary. I'm sorry. That's just the case so far.
And I'm thinking it's like, I got what I'm getting from these first 2 episodes, like painting with a broad brush, which I should be careful to do again because there's only 2 out of 6 episodes, but I'll paint a little bit with a broad brush. I think she wants to talk about the impact of the Eras Tour and less so behind the scenes. How did we do it? A little bit. How did we do it? I would say it's 20%. How did we do it? 80%. This is what the Eras Tour meant to people, which is great. But mama, get you a little bit more information.
I want the creative process. My favorite moments were when we were seeing how it was coming together.
Yeah. So, they show some clips of them rehearsing. It looks like one of the very first times that they rehearsed. And Taylor says, it's just a show. It's just music. But there's something more profound than that going on here. And as, you know, Amos is talking about like, oh, she's so great. She's so this. This is the beginning of the Eras Tour. You know, she's putting it all together. She's singing Mastermind. And I just thought that was very good editing on their part to put in Mastermind.
And she sounds amazing.
And she sounds so amazing. Good. And she sounds
where's
so good.
The full,
she sounds good.
Where's the full recording?
The whole time. Every time you hear her singing a cappella. Whitney Houston style.
Yeah, no,
she
no
sounds amazing.
Auto-tune. No back
and the other girls?
Track.
And the other girls?
Well, to be fair, the other girls are also singing.
Well, yes. Well, yes. So I thought that, you know, the Amos scene, it was a little bit, this was a moment where I was like, okay, we're jumping. It comes together. Like, eventually I get why, but it is a little disorienting that Amos is just there all of a sudden. And suddenly we're talking about when we put together the set list, but we don't really get to see it. And then et cetera, et cetera. But still a good scene. Mastermind. She's a mastermind.
Oh, we needed it. We really needed it.
We needed it. So back to the issue at hand. The first show in London after Vienna is happening. We see news clips of people talking about security being stepped up. We see fans being led into the stadium. They do a bunch of fan interviews, clips of chaining bracelets. And I have to tell you, seeing the scene and seeing all the fans in their outfits again and watching people trading the bracelets, it was tears.
Well, we were there too. I saw the picture, the mural that we took a picture in front of. I was like, been there.
I saw that somewhere once before. I know you. I walked with you once upon a dream.
And we only had wonderful experiences at Wembley Stadium. Oh, it was magic.
Yeah, I really liked Wembley. And there's a part at the end when she's talking about the energy was so great, the energy. And I was like, man, I felt it. The energy at Wembley, that first night in London, I'll never forget it. It changed
everything.
It
was everybody different. Was in different areas. We were, the crowd was, she was.
So all the fans are showing up. They're trading bracelets. You know, they're having fun. They're meeting each other, et cetera, et cetera. And meanwhile, Taylor is backstage, tuned into her audiobook. She is lying on the couch, cradling her guitar, listening to her audiobook, obviously trying to like relax, decompress. And she's stressing out about what happened in Vienna. And she says, when you're sort of the ringleader of the show, they can sense and kind of shift. They can sense any kind of shift energetically in you. And you have to really focus on that and factor that in, that you're at the Eras Tour. Nothing's wrong. Nothing's wrong. I'm at the Eras Tour. So that's kind of like where her head's at. I'm not allowed to show anybody that I'm really upset about what happened. And Andrea comes in and Taylor's like sharing her fears with her. And Andrea's like, I know, I'm really upset too. And then guess who decides to finally come to work? Ed Sheeran. And one of my favorite moments in the whole documentary so far is Andrea sees him coming and she goes, just what the doctor ordered. It cured me in a way that Taylor's having this much anxiety over like this thing happening. She's so nervous about the show. It's such a big deal. You know, it's the first show after something horrible almost happened. And she sees that Ed Sheeran is coming in. And because he's like one of Taylor's oldest friends, she says, just what the doctor ordered.
They have such a brotherly energy together. Like, it's fraternal, the energy they have. It's like two bros just chilling. Yeah. Yeah. Not an ounce. They're Barbie dolls when they're together. Not an ounce of sexual chemistry.
They were girls together. I love this part where Ed is like looking at the camera guys and he's like, hey, what's going on? And they're like, hey, are you cool for filming? And Ed's like, yeah. And Taylor's like starting to say like something about how every day that she tours, she's being filmed. And then Ed says, well, what about in Vienna? And Taylor says the filming was meant to start in Vienna, but she didn't get to go. And she tells Ed that she needs to remember tonight the joy of the show because she's having a really hard time. And she's like, I need to go on a break. You know, I'm so tired. And Ed says, well, where are you going to go? And she says, quote, I'm just going to go somewhere no one can find me. I just don't want to be tracked like an animal. I felt very hunted lately. And Ed says, people forget you're a human being amongst all of this. It's bestieism at its finest. He came in and he said exactly what needed to be said. He said, you need a break. You're a human being. Say it. Tell her. Because no one else was saying it. Not, especially not the fans. They were writing their screeds.
Of time when people were tracking her movements in ways they hadn't before, like tracking her plane and seeing where she was. And I think having the world spotlight on you when it's all yay, happy, good is like, woohoo, I love to be the center of attention. When it's everyone saying you're not doing enough, there was almost a terrorist attack and now you're a bad pop star and how can you keep doing this? And I also want to track your plane. I think it doesn't feel so glamorous to be up ritzing and razzing.
It feels so glamorous to
me. You see how that works. But you know what I thought was interesting is that she says here, the cameras were supposed to start in Vienna. And it's really, I'm really like, okay, the thing we don't have is behind the scenes footage of her actually on that first leg of the tour. We have footage from rehearsals. We have footage from even before that happened. We don't have footage of her backstage or any sort of like B-roll from that part of the tour, which again is the most interesting part of the tour. So I wonder what was the impetus to like pick up the cameras after the European tour was pretty much almost over. And I don't know if that's even necessarily true because they were filming in Paris, which happened before. So was there a break or did she mean that they were gonna start up again in Vienna? I'm curious.
Well, I would be curious to know. I'm definitely thinking there's a couple of reasons I can fathom why there was no backstage filming on the first leg of the show, of the tour. That I can
fathom. Mental breakdown?
But what? I get why the second leg, but it's like, I wish I knew exactly like when they came and when they left. Because that's not really clear. Everything is so like disjointed and kind of like, I mean, it's a documentary. They probably have, oh, I don't know, somewhere in the realm of 1,000 hours of footage. So it makes sense that it's kind of like, oh, this is from here, this is from here. But it's like, mama would like to watch the 1,000 hours, if I may be so bold.
Here's my idea. They didn't have the Disney deal, like the deal of what it was going to be, how many episodes it was going to be, a clear idea until towards the end of the tour. Like they were negotiating it. It probably came through like halfway through. And I think the Paris footage, to me, I think she probably independently filmed that and was just like, I want to document this. This is interesting to me. And also the creation of the tour, she was like, I also have to document this. But I think the continuity filming only started towards the end of the tour, which is interesting.
Yeah. I'd like to see the raw footage. They'll never show me, obviously. I'm just a prol, but it would be nice. Well, let me tell you, you're never going to get it. And that's on
You're
period.
Never going to get it.
So I did. Then they start to like rehearse and like practice the mashup. And I actually really enjoyed watching their creative process for getting the mashup set up. I love seeing them when Taylor can't get the chords right and he has to physically show her how to do it. And then she immediately gets it when she sees it. It's like she's like genius. A visual. Yeah, she's genius. She's a mastermind.
It's the same with the choreography.
And I also really enjoyed seeing them like working and playing together and how much playing music with her friends can like calm Taylor down and make her really happy. When she like bursts out laughing, when she's singing, is it Thinking Out Loud? That makes me so happy. Cause she was down bad in the gutter before
she was
he showed up.
I mean, she said to Andrea, playing. I'm having like a physical reaction to the way that I feel right now. Like, I don't know how to stop it. And then the doctor came.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Ed. So after this, you know, it's time to get the show going. So we cut to a scene of fans being let in. And then we're also seeing Taylor's getting her hair and makeup done. And then title card. Before each of the five Wembley shows, Taylor meets privately with the survivors and the families of the victims of the tragic attack in Southport. And the very next thing that we see, obviously there were no cameras in the room for that, for God's sake. And then the next thing we see is her in her beautiful orange, the man outfit, walking down the hall and having a deeply emotional reaction to what she just went through. And it made me think when I saw her coming out of the room and walking down the hallway, pretty much alone, aside from with a couple of crew members and Andrea, crying her eyes out. I was like, I was thinking about what she said earlier when she said, I won't do this in front of them. It's like she like held it all in. It reminded me of when she did Ronin. And she didn't cry at all. And then as soon as she got off stage, it was just like she just held it in and then she had to release it. And that's what it reminded me of. And one of my favorite moments in the documentary is when she's crying, sitting down, and Andrea hugs her and says, I know you helped them. I know it doesn't seem like it, but I know you helped them.
And she did. I bet 100% that she did. To me, the moment that really got me was when they were walking back into her dressing room and Taylor has to like steady herself on a pillar. She just like puts her hand out kind of and is like in the middle of sobbing just to kind of like stop her from falling over, I guess. Seeing Andrea and Taylor like that is very emotional because I feel like their bond as parent and child is so strong and so solid. And you can see in these moments why Taylor says, I don't need a therapist. I've got my mom.
I just feel very
every
sane.
Every time I think about it, I remember, who am I supposed to talk to? What am I supposed to do if there's no you? Like, it just, that song becomes more and more like poignant and relevant the more that we see them interacting with each other.
Well, it's like, who's the first person, you know, it's like just that scene when she's really upset about Vienna. Who's the first person that comes into the room to talk to her? Andrea. Who's the person that she wants with her in the room as she's talking to the families? Andrea. Who's the first person she wants to see after that? Andrea. So it's an enviable relationship that she has with her mother. And it makes me really happy that she has that because it's so steadying. I think it's like a rock in a storm is Andrea to her.
I think it's the only reason why she's been able to stay sane this entire time. She said it before too, like the fact that she has her family around her is really important. I also think it's hilarious. Scott Swift, not mentioned, not pictured, not depicted.
Not yet. No, he's not there yet. I think my understanding is like, I was thinking when I was watching, I was like, is there ever a time where Andrea does not go? You know, it's like, is there ever a time where she's like, I'm sitting this out? But like on the tour, on the Eras tour. Is there ever
on the Eras tour
where she's
not there?
I don't know.
I think there might have been times where she didn't go out to the crowd. But I'm pretty sure she was there all the time.
I think so too, which is amazing, which is pretty cool. It's kind of like, you kind of get kind of jealous of that.
I was about to say, I wish I was her.
Yeah.
I wish I was the Eras tour 152 times.
So as this is happening, Taylor's really upset and she says, quote, from a mental standpoint, I just do live in a reality that's very unreal a lot of the time, but it's my job to kind of be able to handle all these feelings and then perk up immediately to perform. That's just the way it's got to be, unquote. That's the way it's got to be. That's the way that she sees it, at least.
She's been doing it for so long as well. It's like the Eras tour for her really is like the culmination, the peak of all these skills that she's honed over the years, not just performing, but also like learning how to manage being a public figure.
Right. So she has this whole scene where she's having, you know, like a really emotional reaction to what just happened, you know, tragedy, et cetera, et cetera. And then we kind of go right into the show. And I think they did that deliberately. Like, yeah, she was literally just crying her eyes out, and now she's going to go and be the diva that we all see. I enjoyed during this part seeing a little bit of the mechanics of how the show actually starts and how many people helped to get the show started, from like getting Taylor to the stage, the golf cart, to getting her in the cleaning cart, to getting her to where she needs to be, et cetera, et cetera. And that little thing, the little horse thing that she rides underneath the stage to get to the middle, hilarious. It cracks me
up. I love, and she sits in a real chair. She's like literally sitting in a chair waiting to scramble onto the platform. I told you there's a city under there. Like there's a Taco Bell, there's everything that you need. I also, for me, this is what I live for. I love to see the behind the scenes stuff, specifically like the entrance, I think is so, it's cunt.
It's kind of, because it's like, it's something that you've seen a million times. I want to see it from another angle. And you do.
I've never seen it this way.
The last angle there is in all the world. She looks really calm too when she's
about to go up on the stage. She looks really calm. The part where she seemed nervous to me was at the cleaning cart.
Yeah. And then I think like she kind of enters this like space. She gets into her little stool and she's like, oh, the show's starting. And then of course, when she gets on the lift, there's always a message for her. I couldn't read it, what it said. It was too blurry, but there's another one that I've read and it says something like, we're going to do this. You got this. We've all got your back. Let's go. There's like a picture of Meredith on it. And she always reads it and she smiles and it makes me really happy. It's like, whose job is it to come up with the message? I want to know.
It's a family.
It's a family. And then up she goes from, you know, one thing into the next. It's been a long time coming. It's you and me. That's my whole world. And one of my all-time favorite shots in the whole documentary so far, she's doing the man. She's in her little outfit. And it cuts to this girl weeping and screaming the man. Yeah. I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, girl.
Exactly.
I've been there.
Yes.
No, I've been there. Mm-hmm. If I was a man, then I'd be the man. What's
it's
not
true.
Thinking?
On so the Eras tour?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. So at this part, we see kind of like bits and bobs of like how the show runs from backstage. We see like dancers running around. We see clothes being changed. Taylor waiting for the Fearless door to open. We see the hand heart and then parts of the stage. People dancing. It's kind of like a lightning round, a mini lightning round of an Eras Tour show in glimpses and flashes, including some backstage stuff, which I enjoyed. I do wish there was more, but again, we're only two episodes in. Who knows what's going to happen?
This part was a little bit filler to me. Like it went on just a tad too long. And this happens in the second episode too.
So we see it. All this leads up to the surprise song with Ed Sheeran and seeing him like hunched down and have to crawl around. How come he couldn't ride the little thing? It's not allowed. Not for Ed Sheeran. No, he has to crouch and crawl around down there. And what's really sends me is the dichotomy of the way Ed was sitting like excitedly waiting for his turn to go up. And the next time we see Florence, she's like,
she's literally like, what is about to happen to me?
It was a hostage situation.
Yeah, but
we'll get into that when we get into that. So Ed comes up. Everybody's extremely happy. What else is there in life other than Ed Sheeran showing up at Wembley Stadium for a Londoner? I don't know. I'm really not sure. So they perform together.
You wanted this.
Right. And everyone is cheering and happy. And then it starts to fade out on this really big happy moment. And we see all these scenes like slow motion of fans smiling and happy and crying and having the times of their lives. And over this montage, Taylor says, quote, there's so many hundreds of moments of individual eye contact throughout the show. I see the mass quantities of joy that everyone's feeling. What's interesting is like there's some joy in the show, but there's a lot of emotions in this that aren't just like put on your smiley face and come to the Eras Tour. It's so much more. You look out into the crowd and this isn't just like a blob of lights. These are millions of stories and all these counter narratives all colliding in one place where we feel safe to be demonstrative about a whole spectrum of emotion. That stuff is really powerful. Life contains multitudes, and we're kind of exploring all the dramatic edges of these things. That's what might be unlocking feelings of joy, feelings of euphoria. And it still gets me. It does. Me too.
That is my favorite thing she said in the entire documentary series, because I think it explains it so well. And it's, I think if you haven't been to the Eras Tour and you don't have a connection to her music, it's kind of difficult to understand why it was such a phenomenon, not just a concert or a show. But it's true. It's the release of so many different kinds of emotions. And Taylor's discography is actually mostly not happy. Most of it is not like, yay, I love to be alive. Of course, there's moments of that. But a lot of it is like, I'm at the bottom of everything and experiencing like the All Too Well 10 experience is so cathartic, and it was really special. And my beloved Eras Tour,
and that's all there is to it. This is another one of my favorite parts. I did really like all the close-ups of the fans' faces And especially like all the different kinds of fans that were there, young women, older women, middle-aged women. And then you had boys there as well. And then you had, you know, like just every, from all corners of the world were at the Eras Tour. It's a place for everybody.
God is a Swiftie.
It's a place for everybody. God, what if God is a DJ? If he were, he'd be at the Eras Tour.
He would.
So after she gets off stage, she's really high energy. She says, "We're back! This was the most fun I've had," just knowing how happy they all were. She's going around. She's hugging everyone. She's like, "Yeah!" She's like on a post-show high. And I have to tell you the truth. If I was a crew member who's like, the night's not over for me, girl, and she was coming out screaming in my face, doing this, that, and the other thing, I'd be like, you gotta dial it back.
Go home.
And actually, go home, you can see in the background at one point, there's one crew guy, he's got his headset on, and he just like looks at her, no expression on his face. Me. I'd be like, I've still got 6 hours to go, diva. Thank you so much.
A physical labor.
So then she immediately gets in the car. I like how she unzips her boots. She gets in the car, unzips her boots, and then she says thank you to the person who takes her boots away and hands her a water with a straw already inside. It's diva
behavior. Don't forget, she also meets our favorite man again, British-Australian man, as she's exiting into the car, and she goes, did anything terrible happen that I don't know about? And he said, no. And I think that also was why she was like, oh, yay.
Period. So then she immediately calls Travis in the car as Sweet Nothing plays. There's something to that.
When Sweet Nothing started playing, my hand heart doubled in size.
She tells Travis, it's like the crowd knew that I needed to pick me up. They were wilder than I've ever seen. Again, we knew that. We've been at Wembley. Mm-hmm. We know the power. Mm-hmm. We know the energy.
We know the
energy of Wembley. It's a strong, beautiful place. Mm-hmm. And I think London, I mean, there's any show that she did would have been an amazing show after Vienna, because honestly, I don't think, and I've said this before, what Eras Tour show was like not good? Doesn't exist.
Not good. Well,
every single
I might have
Eras
a comment
Tour
on
show.
That. Just kidding.
Say.
I don't. Say it.
I don't.
Well, the Vancouver ones, she was tired. And I remember that being kind of obvious, but they weren't bad shows. She just seemed tired. No.
And everybody there was living La Vida Loca.
So was she, just in a tired manner.
She goes back to the hotel room. We see the kitty cats. They're all going crazy.
Meredith mentioned. And there she is. There. And I was surprised. Meredith came running. She said, where have you been, bitch?
Yeah. There she is, my bitch wife.
Did you get to the polls?
Did you get
to
the
Meredith
polls?
Here.
So she's running her bath. She's talking about what she's going to do for the rest of the night. I can't sleep till 4 a.m., et cetera, et cetera. And then it also kind of fried me. To take off her makeup, she uses a makeup removing wipe. That has to be one of the most... I'm of the people, pedestrian things I've ever seen. Even I, Madeline, use a makeup removing cleanser at night. Not her. She said makeup wipe, Neutrogena, please.
I bet she, you know what I saw in her bathtub? She also had a really expensive like Tata Harper face wash. So I bet she takes that off and then she gets in the bath and then she does like a proper cleanse. But I think when you have that much makeup, surely the wipe is the only way to literally it's shellacked.
The wipe is best. For there is nothing, and people get mad at you for using wipes because they're not good for the environment. But this is just a comment because I know the comments are going to show up. They are best for when you're doing your makeup and you have to fix it as you go. Nothing is better than a makeup removing cleanser. I mean, let's open the case. It strips it 100%.
Yeah, for your skin, that's just not, it's not what you need to do. You know what I noticed as well? When she takes off her lashes, she looks really different. The way they did her eyes for the tour, like the way they drew her liner and the way they did her lashes and stuff, it really exaggerates the like foxy eye or like the Taylor Swift like squint kind of. And then when she takes the lashes off, I was like, oh, there she is, another person.
Yeah. The lashes really do something. I've actually never worn falsies. Maybe I should slap them.
I didn't even notice she was wearing them.
That's how good they are. Mm-hmm. Ripped me off like false lashes and threw me away. Period. So that's the end of the episode. Is Taylor using Neutrogena makeup removing wipes and getting into the bath? Period.
And is Meredith getting her to go to the polls? We don't know.
We don't know. We don't have that information. Episode one. I cheered.
That was my favorite one so far. I mean, lots of powerful stuff, lots of Tay propaganda, but we knew that. I was waiting for it. Like, I was primed and ready to receive the Tay propaganda. And please don't mistake any criticisms for not cheering, because I'm cheering.
Oh, we cheered the entire time. There was not a moment.
I'm cheering.
Ed Sheeran. Mm-hmm.
You heard that? Well, if you want to see our reaction, by the time this comes out, we're going to be right on the cusp of two new episodes. And episode 1 and 2 reaction from me is up on the Patreon. So is Madeline's. And don't forget to get tickets to the Evolution of a Snake Snares Tour in Australia at our beloved Snares Tour. Wait to see our documentary.
It's going to be incredible. We should have a documentary. I don't see why
we should. We have. It's called the Snares Tour Vlog.
Right. Yeah.